Mini episode 1827 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode 1827. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris coming at you with one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, Ben Chu. And most of the time, on to talk NBA with us. He was recently for our 2024-2025 NBA basketball preview in his primary role as FDH Hoops Analyst. But we've worked him in our little mini series over a period of time, looking at the streaming industry and then also increasingly on TV shows that he and I both enjoy. So we have today, this is a spoilered review of season 7 of Black Mirror. And I'm just going to preface by saying I had not watched Black Mirror previously. Ben had implored me to do so at various points in time. And then with season 7 coming out and knowing that it was to be very, very technology oriented, this was something where he's like, look, you got to watch this. We got to do a segment on it, whatever. So the idea for the segment is 100% his, and I have to say also, I'm grateful in the sense of now I'm going to go back and watch the first 6 seasons. It's one of those things where I'm primarily somebody who enjoys episodic television, so I didn't know how much I would enjoy the standalone nature of it. I like anthologies, but that's a season unto itself. I've seen this referred to as an anthology, but I don't think it really is. I mean, each season might have a very loose theme, but it's completely different casting, completely different story from episode to episode. We'll talk about this as we go through. So, Ben, thank you for introducing me to this series. I had a lot of fun watching it. We compared our top 6 rankings for the season here. Yours and mine are largely different, but thank you, and I'm really looking forward to breaking it down with you.
Well, I appreciate it, Rick. Always ready to dive on in.
Well, this is something where, you know, in the rankings going through, number 6 on your list, and again, I'm assuming you're looking at it like I do. Like number 6 on my list, actually, we'll get to this significantly later because it's number 2 on your list, Common People. So it's the first one that I'd watched. It's episode 7.1, and that really sort of kind of hooked me on the series. So this is one of those things where, to me, this season is essentially the WrestleMania 17 of seasons of like, I got that one at like, if it was a wrestling match, I'd give it 3.5 stars, which is pretty darn good. I give the best one, the wrestling equivalent of 5 stars. So I'm guessing it's largely the same for you. You have Plaything as number 6 on your list at an episode where Peter Cataldi, who I know I've talked up to you a great deal of, I enjoy this guy in whatever he's in. And there's a really, really great movie in the loop where it's sort of a satire on the Iraq War and the way that it came about. And he plays a role that he played in other series or a BBC series of being a British political consultant. Very acerbic, very much just like in people's face, chewing them out. Very hilarious, witty, and frightening if you're somebody that's got to deal with him. And there's a scene towards the end where he is matched up. He is arguing with James Gandolfini, who plays an American general who is sort of against the whole march to war. And the two of them going back and forth. That's one of those things where it's just like, I sort of liken that to when Gene Hackman and Dennis Farina did that great scene in Get Shorty. Like, it's almost like a dream match of actors. And I always think of him as being part of that with Gandolfini. Here he plays a former PC Zone reviewer from the 1990s, somebody who basically has seemingly sort of gone off his rocker over the years. He is arrested for a petty crime, brought into the police station. The police match him to a crime from years ago, and they're interrogating him, and he mentions the crime, but in the course of this larger story that he's telling. And the way that it went, and particularly the twist on it at the end, I don't know that I've ever seen a twist like that anywhere in any episode ever. The other one, I'm going to struggle with the pronunciation, Bettenhoyer, however you pronounce that. That one had a big one too, but Plaything, that's the reason I had it significantly higher on the list than you did, because that ending, it just, there's nothing that you saw in the course of the episode to prepare you for that. And we'll get into that. But that's a thing where, yeah, it's just so brilliantly done.
Yeah, and I mean, I have to note, it's only lower on my list, Rick, just from the history aspect of, like, this was a takeoff of a prior episode, mostly notable for the interactive movie, Black Mirror Bandersnatch, brought back a character by the name of Colin Rittman, mm-hmm. who was played by Will Poulter. So I thought it was a very good episode, but I also felt like it was kind of like an additional episode on top of Bandersnatch, and because of that, it wasn't as good as it probably could have been. But I felt the storyline was great. Peter Capaldi was fantastic, and the idea that we could create software that built, or Will Poulter's character said, who creates software that helps create life.
Mm-hmm.
And then we discuss, like, especially within the world of video games and in AI and in art, like, can we have a living entity? Can we have living entities, even if they don't really exist? And one of the big points of that episode is when Will Poulter's character is showing the younger Peter Capaldi's character in the Thronglets video game. One of the big questions is like, the PC's overviewer asks him essentially and says, like, what's the point of this game? It's like, does it need a point? And I think that's a very telling scenario in today's AI technology, is that we are now in an existence or in a world where we can create whatever we want if we have the imagination and with the possibility of it. I did like the twist too. The only thing I'm worried about with something like that is it was kind of an ambiguous ending. And I'm one of those people that I don't mind ambiguous endings in anthology series, but I was also kind of like, I felt like it was a lot of exposition points in those episodes. And again, that's why, you know, Black Mirror is such a great series, because they can play on some different sci-fi aspects more than anything else.
Yeah, and the way that it went, I've seen a lot of comparisons on Reddit to The Sims, which also came out in the 1990s, of where you're creating on-screen life. These creatures seem to be a lot more primitive to the naked eye, and it was sort of telling, but it was a big misdirection here that Cataldi's character, Cameron Walker, only upon having been fed acid was he able to sort of tap into their consciousness and everything. So you're being set up to sort of regard this guy as just a complete nutball. He keeps begging, you know, them at the various points in time, if I could only sketch this out for you, it will help me explain. If I could only sketch this out. And they're like, we can't give you a pen. You could use it to harm yourself. You could whatever. Make it a felt tip pen, whatever. I mean, the thing, and I guarantee you, unless anybody was spoiled on this, not one person ever. I don't know how many times you could say not one person ever would have seen the twists and turn coming. Not one person ever would have thought this guy is drawing out a QR code because he's going to hold it up to the camera in the police station, and it's going to trigger this huge worldwide effect, which leads to the ambiguous ending that you're talking about. I mean, something that literally within the framework of this story changes the trajectory of world history is not something any of us signed up for at the beginning of this episode.
Right. And I mean, initially, too, like, and again, pacing was very important in this episode. And it felt mm-hmm. like it was kind of a backtracking into the history of someone and just understanding just how, and again, on some level, it's also in the discussion of obsession in society, because he becomes essentially obsessed with a virtual world, which we've seen before. At the end of the day, we've seen stuff like the Slender Man murders and all these other things where people get engrossed in society on one specific thing. Like, obviously, another great sort of representation to this was the Donald Glover series Swarm on Amazon Prime Video, which detailed a young woman's obsession with a pop star, and essentially she commits murder against someone at some point regarding that. So it feels like that was also part of this episode, too, was like, talking about becoming obsessed with an entity or becoming obsessed with a thing, even though there's a whole level of, are you associated to them or not? And again, too, like the one thing that you also have to praise Black Mirror for is that it's something that's a common discussion in our society right now in terms of how we become obsessive regarding video games, obsessive about personalities. And again, too, where it's sort of a story of like a be careful what you wish for situation where where the main character essentially becomes obsessed with keeping the Thronglets alive and letting their knowledge out into the world.
Yes. And there is a Thronglets game that, again, the QR code that is there, if you do scan that, it will download the game as a mobile app on your phone. But it's one of those things where I saw people on Reddit saying, I wasn't going to scan that for very obvious reasons. That screwed up my head too much watching it there. You don't want to risk having something like that happen. Probably anytime, and anybody that's watched that episode the rest of our lives, anytime we scan a QR code, we may have that in the back of our minds on whether we're triggering this ambiguous ending. Is it the end of humanity? Is it he kept talking up this whole utopian thing that the Thronglets are advanced beyond us? There will be peace, love, and understanding if there's the case. So at the end of the episode, the cop who, and there are characters in the different episodes in this season who appear to be, I don't mean this super critically, but sort of plot devices, like the detective who was interrogating him almost sort of deliberately obtuse, like, just tell me the facts, dagnabbit, you know, and that kind of thing. But of where, you know, he basically, after having felt this big shock that everybody else did, of where Cameron Walker is standing over him and extending a hand, it's a thing of like, well, then that's the ambiguous ending you're talking about. Is that guy dead along with everybody else in humanity? Is it just that his brain has been reprogrammed to this whole peace, love, and understanding thing? As far as the way that it jarred all of the electronics in the world for that period of time, safe to say that if you were in an airplane or anything like that, you're dead. So this would have been, I mean, even the best case scenario of where humanity has been reprogrammed for the better, you got a lot of people dying because of the technology short that happened in the moment. But like you said, it's left to us to kind of, I'm not a huge fan of make your own ending either. So that's where I kind of, you know, potentially dock it a little bit. But the twist of like this story that you're, I mean, they almost deliberately sort of gaslight you into believing that it's a more or less mundane kind of a story. And then the way that it ends with world-changing ramifications, that's where I just ended up boosting it up. I had this one on my list. Let me see here. On my list.
I believe it was two.
I had it too. I said most shocking ending ever. So that is that's where you and I came down on that one. But like I suspected, like me with common people, I knew that you, even the worst episode, quote unquote worst, it's just we have to put something number six if we're doing this, right? Yeah. That's kind of how I was with common people.
And I thought too that just that entire episode was really well done. It just,
yeah,
I felt like there were more memorable episodes instead of that one. And the weird part about this season too is that it's this weird sort of common denomination from fans of the show, whether on Reddit or on, you know, all these all these TV reviewers, the ones that we tend to rank lowest or the ones we tend to rank the highest, everyone is split over, essentially. It's either you love this episode or you didn't like it or it was somewhere in the middle. In some seasons of Black Mirror, I think with like other sort of similar series like Twilight Zone 2 was, there were very memorable, notable episodes, but then there were also some personal favorites for individuals.
Yes. And the ones that you had number one and I had number one are both, in a sense, those are kind of divisive as far as how people regard them, that it's a love it or hate it kind of a thing. Seems to be far more in the love category, but there's some people who really kind of differ and say it wasn't my cup of tea. One of the ones here, again, you had this as number five in your rankings, and I had this also as number five in my rankings. This is one of the ones that I have probably seen number one more than anything else, and that is the last episode of the season, 7.6 USS Callister Into Infinity. Now, this is one where, again, me never having watched Black Mirror before, I understand that it's a sequel to an earlier episode. And that's a thing where when I saw everybody describing it on Reddit the way that they did, I mean, I really enjoyed it, but it was also like, okay, there's layers that I wasn't getting because I didn't watch the previous episode. So that's a thing where I have it sort of number five on my list with an asterisk, like I'd watched the other one previously. I might have it revised upward. And then subsequently, after the fact, I may revise this upward, even though we're taping now. And it's sort of a moot point if I do subsequently. But, you know, it's one where I said to you off air that, you know, the casting this season, I really enjoyed it. And this is one where, again, a couple of actors that I regard as being really, really, really talented. I mean, Kristen Milioti, that kind of goes without saying. Jesse Plemons. And I think one of the most underrated and underutilized guys in Hollywood. And again, me as a big Sonny Mark, but I mean, Jimmy Simpson, to me, he's great in whatever he's in. And I've seen him in a couple of different things, and I need to seek out more things that he's in. Because he has a unique kind of energy that's really kind of hard to describe. It's disturbing in a way. It's almost always some form of disturbing, but he finds different twists that he can put on it. And so this is one where, again, the storyline goes to some human cloning that takes place at this software game company, and to where you have some of these clones that make their way into the game, and they're literally fighting for their lives against the game players at home. So while the game players at home are controlling characters on a screen, these folks are fighting for their lives against them. And they have counterparts in the outside world. And it is as with all the technology-oriented things in Season 7, completely unique, heck of a concept. Take my hat off to them for it. And like I said, if it sounds like I'm not saying a whole lot bad about something that was number 5 on my list and number 5 on your list, I guess that's because, again, even the worst episodes this season, quote, you should never put worst on anything for this season. But lowest ranked, it's just because you have to put something in the number 5 spot. And I'm thinking that you're probably thinking the same.
Right. And I honestly felt like USS Callister is one of the most, I would say probably for just fans of the series, would put it in their top 5 and most. But I always find it interesting, Rick. It's a build off of a prior episode.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of movement in it. There was a lot of specific thing. Like Kristen Milioti, of course, did another fantastic job. Jimmy Simpson has one of the most unique distinctions now. He's been in not only the newer Twilight Zone, but now back in Black Mirror again. So he's now a veteran of two.
Oh, wow.
Different anthology American sci-fi series now. So. But overall, I thought the episode was really well done. You know, had some interesting plot lines. Nothing like bringing back the Real Housewives of Atlanta bit again, you know.
Yes.
Just amazing. There. And again, too, it's one thing that was very interesting is there was a discussion that Jesse Plemons' character, Robert Daly, was not going to get brought back. Mm-hmm. But that was kind of like left until the last second. And then that he did come back. And it's a very interesting, at least for this story, it's about the whole discussion of the entity of an individual being put into a virtual world. Like these people are not, like the crewmates of the USS Callister are not real, but the personalities and the context of the case, it's real at the end of the day. So that's ultimately one thing. And then of course, again, I know it's a spoiler review. It's again, a little bit of a throwback to the Christmas episode of Black Mirror when eventually they end up in the head of Kristen Milioti's character of the net. So it's again not really. I think personally, it was a good follow-up, but I also felt like it kind of was sandboxed into that was going to be the episode more than anything else.
Yeah, and I want to be careful how I'm going to say this part here too, because I'm just going to say that it's along the same wavelength as opposed to anybody copying anybody. But it's very thought-provoking in the sense that, much like another show that you and I really love, Severance, it's a thing where it's not exactly the innies and the outies, although it kind of is. It's the folks in the outside world. It's the folks in the video game. But you're grappling with the whole thing of basically, you know, two different versions of the same person, two different, you know, souls essentially existing. And you see it with Nanette's character of where in the video game, she's this really, really badass type character that she doesn't even really recognize when she comes face to face with it, because in the outside world, and again, not having watched the previous one, I don't know as much about the outside character, but it clearly didn't have a lot of the same badass tendencies or anything like that. And you see that in the Jimmy Simpson's character in the video game, you know, is far more of a three-dimensional human being as opposed to the kind of corporate monster on the outside who has created this scandal in the first place. and does end up paying the price for it at the end. It is one of the episodes. There aren't a lot of them this season, or hardly any of them, where you'd call it even close to a happy ending. But this one here, this has about as close to a positive ending, I think, all the way around as probably anything that you would see for this season. And I know that it's a franchise that's not normally vaunted for having happy endings, you know, from a character perspective.
Right. And I think, too, what makes this interesting, that Troy Booker, the creator of Black Mirror, hasn't officially at this time ruled out a third iteration of this episode. So
okay,
we will see what ends up happening. But I do feel like it was one of those episodes that you either came into it like you're going to enjoy the episode, or you're just wanting to see, like, where could this go? And I feel like that's sometimes the toughest part, especially about doing any sort of anthology series where you have different, where you're building off of a prior episode.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I meant by sandboxing earlier, is that it felt like this was the way that that episode had to go. There wasn't really that many other sort of differences or things that they could have really added or changed anything at that point. So,
yeah. And ultimately, that's where, again, interestingly and coincidentally to what I said before about why I hadn't watched Black Mirror prior to this, this is an episodic element in here. It's a direct sequel of an episode from an earlier season. So even Black Mirror does have this from time to time. Number four on your list, this is one where it was number one on my list, and this is one where it has been a little bit divisive online as far as some of the thoughts on it. It's highly vaunted, but there are a lot of folks who don't like it a lot, and largely because they feel that Issa Rae was not well cast as the lead, Brandy Friday. But it's a very, very, I mean, it's fascinating on many levels. Hotel Reverie, so it references an old movie, and the studio is going to do a remake, but they're going to do the remake, and we've heard about this here, you know, that they're going to be working in AI and that kind of stuff. And, you know, I've joked about this, that, like, you know, the biggest movie star of the 2030s is going to be James Dean. And I know that's something where particularly the actress and activist Justine Bateman has been very, very pronounced on the subject of this and digital rights of actors and actresses and whatever. So this kind of takes it on headlong of where you're introducing Brandy Friday's character. She is playing the doctor in this movie, but everything else is basically supposed to be the same around her. And it's one of those things where miscommunication was also kind of a theme of this season. So she shows up, she's ready to be basically, she doesn't know that she's going to be immersed into the thing literally, but she is, because she missed the secondary set of instructions. She read the script. She thought that was going to be all there basically was to it. She gets literally, she's basically, you know, put down on a table, stuff strapped to her head. She's immersed into this world. And it's one of those things where I'm not saying there was a lot of similarities other than the way that it made me feel watching it, but it made me feel a lot like the season two finale of Severance, which I was highly, you know, anticipating of, like, where are they going next? Where are they going next? There was just so many twists and turns to it, because she's in there, things start to go awry, then things go completely awry, and the characters in there are kind of becoming self-aware. And it turns out that the one actress in there, Dorothy Chambers, that the character, because Dorothy Chambers had imbued so much of herself in this character, that the character started to pick up some of this kind of stuff, that when Brandy's character accidentally refers to her as Dorothy, that she starts to sort of tap into that. So some of the characters start to become self-aware. The people back at the computer control are freaking out because the things are getting out of control. And then at a certain point, all of the contact is lost. And Brandy is left to kind of fend for herself in this world and really have to divulge to Dorothy's character the true nature of what's going on. This is somebody that's from the 1940s that has no freaking clue about any type of stuff. Nobody believes that they're in a movie. This whole thing about, are we in a simulation or not? Well, we wouldn't believe it if we were. Same kind of thing here. She doesn't believe she's in a simulation. And it's just, there's so many weird different directions it goes in. The way that it made me feel watching it, like, what's going to happen next? What's going to happen next? That is why I put it number one on my list. And again, as I say, I know it's something that you have highly regarded, notwithstanding it being four on your list.
Yeah, and again, I personally love the episode. I did like sort of the interplay, like we've discussed about this, especially with the Hollywood strike, about the role AI will play in television and movies moving forward. And this was a huge riff on that. You know, essentially, I could totally see a scenario we will have an AI-based company, like in the show, in the mirror episode, it's essentially called Redream, where we are able to go back into older movies and older TV shows and find a way to make them newer, make them different. And again, if it wasn't for my number one pick, like Emma Corrin, who plays Dorothy Chambers, probably would get a solid Emmy nod for her role in this thing. And especially at one of the more iconic scenes of when she's breaking through the scenery into the AI world and learning more about the real version of herself. And again, this also gets brought into our discussion of how entertainment can be changed and impacted by AI, and change in how one of the major themes of this episode was essentially how our actions impact others, and how you know we can change the script and get to a different ending based off of how the decisions the characters make, and all these things. It's a really intriguing thought process too, especially if we're talking about, I would say too, and there was another famed episode in series 6 called Jonah's Awful, led by Annie Murphy's character, who essentially that also brought to this whole world, like, of the whole how I wouldn't say dissolution, but essentially the world of fake, which is TV and movies, and our real world, and how everything gets brought together. And it's just a very intriguing scenario to really think about, because we exist in a world now with YouTube and TikTok and social media where we are essentially content creators ourselves. And one of the questions we're always going to talk about, because we've seen the rise of game shows, we've seen the rise of reality TV in the early 2000s, of how we all become commodities at the end of the day. And it's very interesting to consider, especially with Hotel Reverie, is like how one's individual connection with another starts to get impacted when you only begin to learn about someone first away from it.
Right. And this is one of these things too, where, you know, Brandy's character coming into the whole thing here too, is shown that she sort of felt like a little bit of a misfit in the role that she was in, that she was not really getting serious and substantive parts. She was a big star, so she was a huge get for the producers of this movie. But that somebody, she wanted something she could really sink her teeth into. Old movies like this were things that she could kind of relate to because of the kind of acting craft that was involved. So she was already kind of predisposed to want to be a part of something like this. The degree to which she immersed herself in that, such that, you know, at the end, there ends up being a thing of where there's sort of a communication that is able to ensue between her and sort of an AI version of Dorothy. And that it sort of gives maybe a little bit of closure, I think we're led to believe, for Brandy. But one of the big questions about this, and one of the, like, the number one reason this is such a divisive episode, is that Issa Rae, the actress, whenever you're looking at a circumstance where you have an actor playing another actor, it then becomes a thing of, if you're unsatisfied with what you see on the screen, is it that they did a crappy acting job? And that's a thing where, or were they conveying what they were meant to convey? Perhaps this is most famously illustrated in the 20th century. Adrien Grenier was really just lambasted for his performance of Vince on Entourage. But Vince was meant to be shown as, you know, kind of a little bit of a dim, pretty boy, himself not a great actor, somebody that, like, he could be in the popcorn movies and whatever, but by no stretch of the imagination, a serious actor. So I always felt like the actor that was playing Vince kind of took a little bit of a bum rap for that one, because he was playing the role he was meant to play. Now, Brandy, the way that she kind of, you know, breaks down in this scenario here, and that Brandy kind of wasn't smarter about the circumstances that she was in, that's one of those things where, again, I feel like the actress was playing what was written for her on paper, what the direction was, But that is probably the most divisive element of this by far, is the notion that Ms. Ray basically pulled down the whole notion of this and for some people kind of ruined, you know, the experience for them, which I personally cannot relate to. I don't see that at all when I watch it.
Yeah, and it's also tough too, because Issa Rae has had a very notable career at this point. She had done a lot of work already on sketch comedy, and I feel like this is, again, she had her own show for a long, you know, for, I'm trying to remember the exact timeline now, Rick, about how many episodes I'm trying to remember now off the top of my head, but I believe at the time, you know, she had done, she's been an omnipresent actress ever since 2010, 2011. Mm-hmm. And she's done a lot of sketch comedy. This episode tended to be a bit more serious, but then it had a lot of comedic turns. So she was already known and talented for doing so.
Right.
So I can understand, though, why some people may have thought she was an interesting casting choice. But again, too, like you said, sometimes as an actor, the toughest thing you have to do is to dumb your own character down a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it felt like more, too, is that she was reacting like I would think most of us would react.
Yes.
As an actor in an alternate world where you know what's going on, but no one else does. And I think we also talk about this in the role of movies and theaters. And when, I mean, I'll just throw out an example. Like, I'll use Ashton Kutcher as an example. Like,
okay.
During his time on that 70s show, he always played the doofy character, but in real life, he's very intelligent, is an investor, yeah. Was super intrigued by Silicon Valley. So it's also a discussion, too, in terms of individuals, in terms of the characters they portray on TV and movies and the real person at the end of the day.
Yes. And actually, and while I don't agree with the criticism of Issa Rae anymore, I do understand what I think the misperception is that people are making a little bit better after your answer, because I didn't really know about the sketch comedy background. There are moments where, as she's immersed in this scenario and as things are kind of breaking down around her, where there are things that are kind of objectively funny, and she accidentally drops an S-bomb at one point, you know, whereupon, and that just helps, you know, the Dorothy Chambers character to become even more self-aware, like, no, I find it refreshing that you, and so that's probably where people are seeing that, and like, oh, she's leaning on what she does best as a crutch, because she's, you know, a funny person and whatever, and like, again, I find that to be, and again, while I don't really know much of her background, I find that to be misguided, because like you, I think it was a thing of where, and I think that was most importantly what was written on the page, is Brandy is coming into this thing. She's a professional actress. She's used to controlled situations. Everything in Hollywood is a highly controlled situation. When something breaks down around you, plus when you're in an AI world where you don't know what the heck's going on, I feel like her disorientation and the fact that she couldn't be the consummate professional, that's just, again, the way the character was written on the page.
Right. And another huge part of that in the whole discussion of character written on page is the whole Dorothy Chambers' characters in the entirety, and the implication also too that she was LGBTQ for that during that timeline too was also brought into it. And it's also being, that's also part of it as well, because you also have to discuss at the period of times of like in the golden age of Hollywood, there were a lot of closeted actors. And because of that, mm-hmm. Can you really, like in one point during the kiss scene, like the owner of the studio, essentially of the former film studio, essentially, it's like, well, she never kissed like that before. Mm-hmm. So it was really, it's a really interesting character study on someone who's coming in from our world to a fictional AI world based off of another world, but also mm-hmm. on the same point of how individuals would have reacted in this world or within this sort of knowledge base that that someone now has in today's day and age than it was different in the 30s, 40s, and the 50s.
Yes. And just the way that it sort of juxtaposed, like you said, you know, across the different eras and everything like that, you've got that part of it, as well as, you know, going into an AI world and into an AI world where instead of everything being tightly controlled as it would have been if everything was able to stick to the script exactly, where it starts to unravel and become its own. And that's the whole thing, too, that it becomes its own adventure. It becomes a thing where that Brandy has to basically live to make it to the ending credits. Because this, there are people that, you know, similar to the USS Callister thing, there are people that are potentially going to kill her for real. She may not survive the experience. And that's where, again, the stakes of it that are involved, you know, I just thought that, again, it was in a lot of ways unlike anything I had ever seen. And when I saw it at the outset, it was a little bit of a head fake when I just saw the whole thing here. I'm like, are they going to do this completely within an old movie? That was kind of my first thought when I saw it. And I was a little bit kind of disappointed by that because I didn't think it would be that interesting if they tried to tell some kind of a, you know, particularly technology involving story, you know, in that era, because I knew that that was the theme of this season. But to see that as just the jumping off point for everything that came afterwards. Yeah, I thought this was pretty awesome and a great, great episode. All time, you know, for TV, in my estimation. The one that both of us had as number three on our list, again, I struggle to pronounce this one endlessly, Bette Noir. That is the third episode, or the second episode of the season. And that this is one where, again, it's the classic example of the bullied youth coming back in adulthood to get revenge on somebody, but a lot of twists and turns here. And that basically the whole notion that we have in modern culture that people like to do of gaslighting, taking this to an extreme of where the character who has been who was bullied in her youth, Verity, she is somebody who is able to basically it soon emerges she had just previously had another old classmate kill herself. She's working on this one here. We can all see as it's going along that basically she's kind of warping reality in a way. We don't know how until the end. We know that she's a computer expert and everything, and we suspect that there may be something in there that some kind of powers that she's using. We find out the full extent at the end where there's, again, a heck of a twist and turn. I would say second this season only to Plaything. But the way that it goes, it's beautifully written in the sense that Maria, who is the person where Verity gets a job at her company and comes there and undermines her. Maria is like the perfect target for this because she's somebody where, again, she's always got to be right. She's always got to have the last word in the conversation. And it's one of those things where it's a character that's meant to frustrate you until you see that you're not supposed to sympathize with her. Because it later emerges that she was a key part of the bullying that happened to Verity, much as she has tried to disavow herself. Oh, she was bullied, but I had nothing to do with it. Coming to find out that really wasn't the case, and that everything about her makes her the perfect target, such that the previous classmate, it took weeks to kill herself. Maria, it took 5 days until there was a complete breakdown. When the breakdown happens, it's, again, a heck of a twist and turn. But this one here, the way that it went, I rated it as highly as I did, largely because of the twist and turn at the end, and because of how they were able to explain everything that happened, because there were a lot of reality warping things, increasingly so as it goes along. Another notion in modern culture of the Mandela effect, of things that you think you remember and they turn out not to be true. You know, there's a restaurant chain. Is it Bernie's or Barney's? And it's supposed to be Bernie's, but then Verity convinces everybody it's Barney's. And then in reality, it turns out to be Barney's. But we know that Maria wasn't wrong about this. And we find out at the end how just so many layers that went into this whole thing, the classic thing of the bullied and what turns out to be the bullier, the amazing twist at the end that happens because we think that the bullied person is going to come out on top as they almost always do. The gaslighting will be completed. Turns out not to be the case, but just this one was wild start to finish.
Yeah, it was a pretty wild episode. And, you know, the whole term of Bette Noir, which is actually a French term for something to be tested, to be, you know, avoided, it mm-hmm. pretty much said, you know, I mean, Verity's character, who was played by Rosie McEwen, who's done a lot of work mainly on The Alienist on TNT series, but she was mm-hmm. fantastic in that role. And
yes,
one of the big things, and we've talked about this in the Mandela Effect, has been one of the more interesting phenomena that's been discussed over the last decade or so. Obviously, you know, there was that really bad sci-fi movie regarding the Mandela Effect. I feel mm-hmm. like this was a little bit of a better version discussing. And we're talking, it's very interesting for this episode too, Rick, is that this is mainly more of a psychological drama more than anything else. It's about a character who feels like her world is being completely turned upside down. And sort of the ending turns into the whole sci-fi aspect of Verity using Aneka's being able to change realities to fit her own the best, the whole being able to change how people perceive others. And I mean, one of the biggest themes of the season is just the perception we have of everyone.
Mm-hmm.
It was a big part in the Hotel Reverie thing with Brandy Friday. Like the perception of her was that she was always going to be a sidekick and she wanted to be the main character.
Right.
But it feels like especially with this episode, it's like how we perceive people was one of the biggest sort of things, and how, you know, even though this is more of a sci-fi twist at the end, it's how we interpret the world based on our own perceptions of it at the end of the day.
Yes. And this is a thing where to the whole notion again of, you know, living in a simulation, as I think I referenced with the USS Callister episode, or perhaps Plaything, because both of those kind of play with that a little bit here. This kind of comes into play again, and the notion that Verity, through all of her computer work, whether or not in the framework of this world, it is a matter of living in a simulation. If it wasn't the case before, this machine that Verity created made it one, essentially, to where she could basically wipe, you know, existing reality and, based on the needs of the moment, imprint whatever was needed there. And one of the funniest moments of the entire season is when, for something as basic as Verity framing Maria for drinking somebody's almond milk in the office. She drank all of it. She framed Maria for it. And Maria was like, "It can't be me. I have a nut allergy." And everybody is just reacting like, "What the hell are you talking about? A nut allergy, you know?" And they're like, "What is this word nut allergy that you're talking about? You keep saying nut allergy like it's supposed to mean anything." And that is one of the like the funniest examples of Mandela effect that there's probably ever been on screen, to where, again, you know, go to Google it, like, did you mean not allergy? So it was just, that's how reality warping that ended up being. I mean, they did a brilliant job. This was a thing of like, if you were ever going to take the classic twist of somebody getting revenge by gaslighting, this was a matter of you take it and you dip this thing deep in a 55-gallon drum of technology to tell the story.
Right. And the reason I think we both have it at number three is that mainly the ending was a very good twist ending, but I also felt like too, it's just the acting and just the whole process of the episode kind of took you out of the real world for a bit, which is very interesting to see, because that's the major thing with a lot of Black Mirror episodes is that, as you know too, Rick, that when you have these sort of shows that take you out of your own reality and put you into a whole new one, that's just what Black Mirror does is best in terms of any shows. I would say stuff like Severance, White Lotus does very similar things. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, what makes it so unique and what makes this probably one of the top, you know, I'd argue top five TV shows of the last 10 years is just how Charlie Booker's been able to play on the time of the moment along mm-hmm. with putting together all these differing ideas about how technology impacts our world at the end of the day. And you'll see too, like going through these prior seasons, it starts out very, very bleak. And then you get some episodes like San Junipero, which gives you some uplifting and some hope. So that's what Black Mirror does really well. They'll have some incredibly dark episodes, and then they'll have an episode like Bette Noir, which is dark in its own way, but also at the same point, it's very sort of mentally shifting and almost trying to determine how we impact our world. And there was also the discussion too for this episode too, Rick, that there were two different versions of the episode with the whole Barney and Bernie's thing too, that was proven to be shown that some of us were served different episodes. And again, it's not surprising Black Mirror has done many of these things, and there were a bunch of Easter eggs throughout the season that threw back to other things. And one of the example too is this, that the Chicken Chain Barney's is actually a throwback to an episode called Shut Up and Dance, where one of the main characters works at the chicken place. So very sort of Charlie Booker, very sort of doing callbacks to prior episodes and just making sure that for the fans of the series that he gives like a tip of the cap through some of these episodes. But it was, I thought it was a very solid episode. The ending can be left for anyone's discussion about should that have been the ending or should have been something different. It was just a very intriguing episode because I think it was an episode that not a lot of people were expecting from Black Mirror. Like, they've done a lot of psychological stuff before in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But I've also seen, too, that this one was just heavy, heavy psych drama throughout the entirety of the episode.
It really was, and it was one of those things where, again, I've seen it remarked by some people that it took them out of it, that basically that Maria's character, who shockingly comes out on top, uses the thing to kind of make herself, you know, like mistress of the universe kind of a thing. But she was shown during the entirety of the episode, like I said, to not be a very sympathetic character. She was, you know, you could really see this kind of mean girls element of her. So it was true to it in that way. But her coming out on top and in a situation where she was being framed for murder, but where she shoots Verity, kills her, and she ends up basically, you know, grabbing the thing and dictating reality in that moment and sort of taking over and becoming what Verity was. That whole thing, we're used to seeing where the formerly bullied person doing the gaslighting comes out on top. And everyone always just like, oh, it's just a shame that this person snapped. Oh, it's just, I wonder what made that happen. What a shame. But seeing the former bully come out on top is a twist that you don't really see coming that much. And this is one of these things, too, where you said in terms of like reality warping and that you're not normally into that kind of thing. That's kind of where I am, because I've said to you on air and I think off that, like, I'm not somebody at all that thinks of myself as being like a sci-fi kind of a person. I do not ever watch stuff on the sci-fi network or whatever, but like I have found inadvertently that like things that are high level sci-fi, I can get into. 11-22-63, I was big into. The show Counterpart from Stars, the great, it's sort of a twist between, you know, a spy movie or a spy series, but then, you know, a little bit of high-level science fiction in terms of an alternate version of a universe being created and reality playing out in both of those and sometimes blurring over. And Severance. There's a lot of obvious sci-fi elements to Severance. So I'm somebody where if I see that something is sci-fi or fantasy or whatever, that can kind of take me out of it if I know that going in. But it's like if I just go into something without necessarily expecting that element can kind of seduce me and get me to be like, oh, hey, this is what an excellent story this is. It almost sort of has to sneak up on me. And I think maybe what you're describing is maybe a little bit of the same with you, of like, yeah, you don't go into things looking for that.
It's a really intriguing episode. And I think that's mm-hmm. why it's, if you just look at the comparisons of all the best episodes from this season, Bete Noir usually tends to be either three or two in most cases, just because I think it's an original story idea. It's a very impactful episode. And I think also with the time that we live in, it's very interesting about how we can shift realities based off our own perception at the end of the day.
Yes, it really is. It tells an incredible story. Again, one heck of a twist with the ending. Highly recommend. Number two on your list was number six on my list. And I go back to that again of like, I mean, I'd still give it the equivalent of the old three and a half stars for a wrestling match here. The lowest ranked episode of the season for both of us is still something that we would hold in very high regard. And as I said before, the first episode I ever saw of Black Mirror, the one that kind of sucked me in. But as I'm having to prioritize here, the fact that it was more of a straightforward story versus, you know, I've seen with the other Black Mirror episodes of where there's sort of more twists and turns along the way. I mean, you're being led to believe that it's going to be an unhappy ending. As unhappy as it was, I don't know about that. I mean, I was still maybe somewhat kind of surprised, but it was a straight ahead story that they were telling the whole way. An excellent, excellent casting here. Tracy Ellis Ross, as a woman working with this computer company, Rivermind, and Rashida Jones and Chris O'Dowd playing a married couple. And so the Rashida Jones's character, Amanda, she comes down with a brain tumor very quickly. It gets to be severe such that they didn't even know about it before she collapsed. And it's already so far gone at that point of where basically all they can do is sort of like transmit her consciousness onto this Rivermind company's hard drive, if you will, their servers. And that basically for a subscription fee, her life can be streamed back into her body. And so this is something where the husband is like, well, I don't know about this, but if it's the only option for having my wife back here with me, I'll take it. And then over a period of time, you start to see the trade-offs. And it is a very, very heavy parody on a corporate level of streaming services and other things like that. Well, you were on the basic plan. Now you need to be on the plus plan if you want to do this. And, you know, Rashida Jones's character starts giving out ads at various points in time and gets herself in trouble as a school teacher for giving out the wrong ad at the wrong time to the wrong kid. And so this is one of the heavier parody episodes of the season, which works because, in particular, Rashida Jones with the comedic chops. I think we all know about that if we followed her career. It's a great story. And like I said, I only had it 6 on my list because it was basically pretty straightforward to the end. The end was it darker than you thought it would be? I guess so. But it was also probably the most easily predictable one because they were going down the same path the whole time, which I don't necessarily hold against them, but just about every other episode had twists and turns.
Right. And I can totally understand your ranking based on that. And I think more too that this episode was just more, I would say, just interesting because the plot was sort of linear through most of it.
Yes.
And I mean, it's a big discussion too, Rick. We live in a timeline with subscription fees and rising subscription fees, and like one of the more big parts of that whole time, like, is when she is on Rivermind that she only can go through certain zones, like essentially seeing very similar to like the whole, you know, timeline in the 80s and 90s when your cell phone could only have certain areas where you could make a call. And now just sort of we're seeing also, I mean, and also on some level, I'd have to thank Charlie Booker, who did write this episode as well, as it's a little bit of a sort of discussion point on the subscription service, but also at the same point too, it's a little bit critical of the healthcare industry, where you are really impacting someone's life just to make a couple of bucks at the end of the day. And, you know, Tracy Ellis Ross did a fantastic job playing that representative, because she essentially played like, this is great technology, but at the same point, I'm not your friend. I'm working for the company. And it's really an interesting scenario too. Like the whole presupposition of this episode is, would you let someone you love and cared about if there was a way to keep them alive? And it's also, again, and we've seen this in prior seasons of Black Mirror, the discussion of, and also with White Lotus too, the discussion of class and how some people are just trying to get by. And ultimately Chris O'Dowd's character has to humiliate himself via, you know, a video service to do dares to essentially help make money to keep his wife alive. So it was a very, I would say, jarring episode, and that's what Black Mirror does really well. They can jar you with some of these episodes, and it's an interesting construct too, where we discuss, especially in some of these prior episodes, about is the person, and this sort of brings back to one of the other older episodes. I think that was season 2. Essentially, it was an episode called Be Right Back that starred Domino Gleeson and Haley Atwell. Essentially, it's the whole process where it was a married couple where her husband dies and she's now able to get an AI version of him, and then eventually get an AI humanoid version of him. And it talks about the whole thing of like, is this person still a person? And at the end of the day, and the question is too, especially with Rashida Jones's character in the show, is she a real person still? If, you know, if you're just spouting out commercials and sleeping for 14, 16 hours a day, is that person really real at the end of the day?
Yes. And to the other thing too, to the critique of modern healthcare coverage and the system, where it is at its sharpest is as it accelerates later in the episode to the whole thing with the more expensive plans. And if you were on, you know, the plus plan now, that, or the basic plan is now the plus plan, the new plus plan is the super plan, or whatever their terminology was, you get where I'm going. And it's a thing where it emerges when you watch the video, the promotional video for the woman that's on like the top line coverage and how refreshed she is. And she hardly has to do anything and she hardly has to sleep or anything like that, that Rashida Jones's character and everyone else that's on the basic level of this thing, that they are in there because their sleep is exhausting. It's not only that you sleep 14 hours a night, then 16, then more. It's that you get up exhausted. You are essentially, in the course of the night, you're powering the system for the people who are able to afford the best coverage. So it's basically sort of like running on a treadmill while you are asleep because you are providing the power and the juice for the people on the high end that are sucking that off of you and living their best life. So as a satire of that, and of modern healthcare and what some people can get and some people cannot get, that's where it's at its sharpest, because you kind of have to connect the dots on that a little bit. But I mean, if you're on Reddit, somebody will do it for you.
Right. And I think that's what makes this episode just so interesting, whether you rank it high or not this season. Mm-hmm. It's just how we as human beings, how, you know, obviously the rich have more, are afforded more luxury than anything else. And then it's a discussion too of like, if you're just getting by at the end of the day, are you really living? And right. I feel like that's a very common discussion in today's society. And it's not surprising that, you know, the episode took a much darker turn and essentially had the ambiguous ending of Chris O'Dowd maybe killing himself after killing off his wife, sadly. But
yeah,
well, it strikes me of just overall, like, if you were to ask me, like, what is a Black Mirror episode? I feel like mm-hmm. that is one of the very few that you can point out there and say, yeah, that's a Black Mirror episode.
I've seen that described that way, yeah. And that he, again, at her instigation, she's ready to let go. She's ready to give up. So does the old smother with a pillow kind of a thing as she's delivering an ad, by the way.
Yeah. Which and probably ironically, gives too, Rick, the, at least from what Booker had says, like, the reason, the idea that he got for this episode was because of podcasters who rattle off ads and just that transition of going from a very serious subject to talking about, you know, manicures or to talking yeah. about dude wipes at the end of the day. Sadly, we're not sponsored by dude wipes, but you know,
yeah.
And that's, brand out there somehow.
Yeah. And I, you know, and that makes all the sense in the world as far as how that would have been an inspiration and the whole thing that, again, so this service where he is on there, he's humiliating himself by taking various degrading dares. That ends up, a ramification of that ends up costing him his job. So he ends up becoming all the more reliant upon that, which is something where, again, and he never fully divulges to his wife what he's doing to make the money on there. But, you know, he's increasingly beat up over a period of time. And I think it is inferred that he does end up killing himself on screen as part of one of these dares here at the end of it. And in a way, maybe in a vengeful part of his mind, maybe getting that service shut down because it was something that he resented doing as much as he had to do it. And he was made to pay a price for that in his workplace. It was nice to see that the guy who exposed him at his workplace, who got bullied, that something very bad happened to him. So that was a rare feel-good moment in the course of the episode. But it was one where, yes, it told a very powerful story. It was kind of funny. I'd always heard about the Black Mirror penchant for, you know, strange humor and everything like that. And this episode probably embodied it better than anything else during the season. The one that was number one on your list did not do that at all. There wasn't really much strange humor or humor of any type in here. This is one where, again, this one also just a slight bit kind of divisive in the sense that I didn't see anybody on Reddit that really hated this. There were some people that found this one just kind of boring and everything like that. I can't understand that. I mean, that's a thing where, you know, if you're somebody that's not really, you know, wired to be able to process real human emotions while you're watching something like that, if you're one of those kind of people that's kind of dead inside, okay, this is an episode where you're going to yawn your way through. But episode number 7.5, Eulogy, with Paul Giamatti in the lead role and somebody who is, and I mean, I'm not going to say necessarily Shatner-esque, but we think of him as somebody who, not necessarily like overacting, but the larger than life acting, whatever. showing here again, I mean, if you've watched enough of the man's career, I mean, he can bring the dramatic chops. He can tone down the hamminess. He really can do that. There's little to nothing in the way of hamminess here in this character. He is somebody who was contacted by, once again, a computer service, Eulogy, after his character, Philip, is contacted by them after the demise of his ex-girlfriend, Carol. And there is an AI person who contacts him and asks him to contribute memories to this Eulogy project. And this AI person, it turns out to be, it's kind of a twist, it's a replicant, if you will, of her daughter. So this Carol's daughter is in there because it seems like perhaps Carol's daughter is using this to try to learn about this hidden piece of her mother's life as well. Because it was one of those things where, you know, young lovers split apart bitterly, didn't speak of one another again. And like all of Philip's pictures, he basically like sort of had her face to face, burned with a cigarette, cut out. He couldn't even remember her face through the course of this. And he's talking this other, you know, AI person through this and then, you know, comes to find out. I thought the twist was going to be that it was an AI representation of Carol. So I'll stop there and just ask you, were you thinking that was going to be the twist, that was going to be, because he couldn't remember her face?
Because I wasn't sure if it was Karen or it was at least going to be something regarding her family if it was the case, just because they were leaning very heavily early on in that episode towards that direction.
Because that he couldn't remember her face, and it would be at some point, well, I'm right in front of you. Well, that wasn't her. It was somebody similar looking because it was her daughter, but it turned out not to be her. Spoiler alert, in the end, he does see her face when he's able to get some level of closure. But this is a thing where, I kind of felt like, and I'll be interested to know if you agree that this is the story that they were telling. So he's telling the story. You know, they were a couple of, you know, young creatives back in the day, musicians, among other things. And They ran in this whole kind of creative hothouse circle. I got the sense that his character was somebody where perhaps he felt a bit inferior to her because she had this sort of larger-than-life charm about her and always felt like she would leave him at some point, whereupon it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy because subsequently in the relationship, she goes over to, I think, London for a period of time. It's a long-distance kind of a deal. And, you know, through complete ineptitude on his part, he not only cheats on her, but gets caught in that. Like she calls him on his birthday. Like he was depressed that she wasn't there on his birthday. This other woman that had been, you know, wanting to do some troublemaking with him swoops in. And so this other one, of course, she picks up the phone when the other one calls. So it's pretty clear that he cheated on her. And then it's one of those things where he goes over to see her some months later. He thinks it's been patched over sufficiently. He goes over, he does this elaborate proposal for her, which goes over like a fart in church. She just, in the middle of this restaurant, she's so shocked. She gets up and leaves, whatever. This is a thing too, where again, the only part of this maybe I didn't buy was his obliviousness on the whole thing of like, because he got this bottle of champagne, he had to drink the whole thing himself, and it's implied that he had maybe a little bit of a drinking issue when he was younger, but it was like that she wouldn't have a drop of champagne the whole time. Like, I don't know how he didn't start thinking this. Like, isn't that the first thing you start thinking of when a woman is like, no, I can't, you know? Come on. I mean, he missed it. Of course she was pregnant. Plot twist. It's the daughter that he's talking to the AI replicant of. And so it's a thing where ultimately she goes back to their room and she leaves him a note there. I guess it was on the floor. It's shown as being on the floor. Now he has been, and this is one of these things too, that's pretty cool because I have seen the AI technology in the last year or so where you can go inside a picture and it becomes a 3D kind of a thing. So he's literally going inside pictures at various points here, you know, and one of them is he goes in this hotel room that he's angry, he's heartbroken, he's drunk, he trashed the room. But then, you know, he sees the note on the floor that she left him. She explains, of course, hey, look, I'm sorry, I'm pregnant. I did a little, tit for tat when you cheated on me. Turns out I'm pregnant. If you'd like to be with me, show up at such and such time tomorrow. Of course, he never showed up because he never saw the note. One of the most heartbreaking moments of the whole season is he's there, the older version of him, and he's tugging at this note, and the AI person's having to tell him, you can't pick it up, you can't read it, you can't whatever. Subsequently, he finds out what was in it. But it was a thing where, because I think it ended up being in his collection somewhere, right? I think it ended up being in his, so he's able to unearth the actual thing himself, but seeing him desperately try to get at that note to read it. So it becomes a thing where, oh, well, you know, miscommunication, doomed lovers, whatever. But at the same point in time, it's a thing where I do feel like in the course of the story, as poignant as it was, that his own shortcomings, be it, you know, the heavy amount of drinking that he did when he was younger, the obvious amount of insecurity that he felt being with her the whole period of time, it felt like it was a thing where one way or another it was going to become a self-fulfilling prophecy. In the end, maybe that's the closure that he gets, is maybe he's realizing that, because in the end, he is eventually able to see her face. But it's a thing where, you know, it seems like in a sense they're trying to tell the story of like, well, if he'd only showed up the next day, everything would have worked out, you know. And then Jim Norton voice, would it? Because, you know, maybe it would have, but it probably would have required more than the 1992 version of his character had in him at that time. That's what I think.
Right. And I think the reason why this episode is so polarizing is mainly from Paul Giamatti's performance, because, and again, like you've noted earlier, Rick, too, he was, most of his very known roles are very bombastic, very in your face. And this time he got to play a little bit more an understated role. And it's also, like you said, with the technology, like we're getting to that point where we're going to be able to find and create full depictions of old images and old photos. And I think what makes this episode just so interesting is that it's the whole construct of looking at young love, but also at the same point, too, of looking at failed love at the same point. And it's an interesting story, because I feel like most people in their lives have felt that at some level. But also, too, the big sort of underlying part of this episode is using technology today to improve upon the world in the past. And we discussed this with many of these episodes. It's about perception. Like, he had the perception that she was, you know, the problem at the end of the day, when it turned out like he had to shoulder some of the blame as well. So,
right.
I think it's going to be one of those scenarios where it was more of a Paul Giamatti performance that made this one of the more notable episodes of the history of the show. But it's also more that it's more of a, there are episodes of the Black Mirror sort of universe that are past us, but it felt very realistic more than anything else.
Yes, it really, really did, because there was probably less suspend your imagination than anything else here, because, you know, we're probably not too far off from where you will be able to physically insert yourself into a picture and look at the scenario and everything like that, and see it as this still kind of landscape kind of a deal. It really, in very, very few ways, I felt like got beyond where we are in this moment with AI. I had this as number 4 on my list, but again, like I said, I mean, I have all of, I think you have 6 through 1 pretty tightly packed on your list. Yeah, I did as well. Yeah. And this is the thing where, again, it was maybe the most emotionally grabbing out of the series, because that's kind of a universal thing. People can, you know, look at, you know, lost love and regret and those types of things. But the degree to which, because, again, he was, as he was going through this thing, there would be kind of snarky comments that he would make throughout as he's narrating the past to the AI replicant of her daughter, and he's talking about things and just how she was and everything like that. And it just shows, and like I said, maybe that whole thing of where he could see her face at the end, maybe it was the moment of recognition that, again, and I haven't seen a lot of people commenting on this on Reddit, this is entirely sort of my observation, but the internalized sort of feeling that he had of inadequacy as regards her, because he saw her as being, you know, this, you know, huge supernova of a person, whatever. And he regarded that kind of bitterly, because he felt like in the end she kind of smashed him and broke his heart and whatever. But it was a thing where, the, like, him looking at that the whole time, this internalized feeling that maybe he wasn't worthy of her, maybe he wasn't good enough for her, whatever. And that maybe he finally comes to grips with that at the end, and that he basically sort of built his own monster, because he always, you can hear as he's telling the story, you know, and he's telling it from the lens of 2020, but you, but it's one of these things where he clearly felt, you know, like he wasn't good enough for her.
Yeah. And I mean, the really interesting part of this, just this entire scenario at the end of the day, is just, if you look at just him, just look at Paul Giamatti's character, I was like, he goes through all the progressions of trying to remember something. And then at the same level, the whole discussion of trying to remember a past that he had at some point buried, which is clear from one of the whole huge parts of the episode of him going through the past and then eventually culminating him and finally seeing her at the end. The real question at the end of the day is, it's not necessarily a question of fault, Rick, but it's also a question of how we analyze moments in our lives. And that what makes, and again, that's what Black Mirror does very well in terms of any other anthology series, which is it makes us look into each other, each of ourselves as individuals, and how we impact the world. And also, too, we talk about the perception of how we see things. I mean, it's a huge part of the Bette Noir episode, too, is like our perception of ourselves creates our reality on some level. So,
yes,
we feel like, especially with this episode, is that he is now finally letting go and realizing that the world is more, you know, is not as black as white, black and white as he thought it was at the end of the day. And that culminates in the final couple scenes of the episode.
Yes, yes. It tells one heck of a story and really kind of takes you on that ride to where, again, he appears to get closure at the end of the episode. What's never really shown or even implied is what his life looked like after that. He said it put him in a hole for 15 years. He seems to be shown as being alone at that point in time. You know, if the implication that it really put him in a hole for 15 years, the implication is that perhaps he got married subsequently and or had kids subsequently, or at least one, but that isn't necessarily shown. So there are some things that are left, you know, for the viewer to sort of judge for themselves or guess for themselves. But it was in a lot of ways the most heart-wrenching episode of the season. And again, it was one where, like I said, it was really, really kind of, you know, jarring to see. And again, a roller coaster ride through the season, tonally, in terms of subject matter, in terms of, you know, the lightness of it. This was the episode where there was the least amount of lightness to it. I think Plaything is probably not far behind, you know, in that regard. But all the different elements, tonally, as well as storytelling, as well as the aspects of technology, they distinguished each of these six episodes as much as they possibly could whilst being within the wider rubric of technology.
And I think that's what Black Mirror does just as well as any TV series. Like every year, every season, there's not necessarily a theme, but there's an overarching theme about how our world looks and how technology impacts it at the end of the day.
Yeah. Well, you definitely picked the right season to get me watching it, which I appreciate. I will go back and watch subsequent seasons in the time ahead. So thank you very much for having put me onto this show, Ben. And I think, and I know based on what we delivered here today, this is something where this is something that fans of season 7 and those who watched it, it gives them a lot to chew over as well.
Yeah. And it's going to be really interesting to see season 8's whole discussion. We don't know yet. There's going to be a lot of stuff's going to happen in the next couple of years. So
yes,
we'll see what season 8 turns out to be.
Yes, whenever that is, because I know there's been gaps between seasons on when they've come out, but we'll see when that is. And again, I will look forward to watching and reviewing with you at that period of time. Much appreciated, Ben Chu. Thank you so much. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FBH Lounge mini episode 1827.